You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
People say our marriage is impossible. Those are the words of today's guests, Lori and Matt Cree. Lori is a writer, speaker, and ministry leader. She teaches people how to approach sexuality with the gospel. And Matt is a licensed professional counselor and director of counseling at Caring Well Counseling. Together, Lori and Matt host the Hole in My Heart podcast. They live with their three children in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So what makes their marriage impossible? Well, perhaps for one thing, they have a mixed orientation marriage. You'll find out what a mixed orientation marriage is in this episode. But beyond that, they say that every marriage is impossible because we all have an orientation to ourself, whereas marriage requires us to have an orientation to the other. In this episode, we explore the intersection of marriage and sexuality and the gospel. Matt and Lori share part of their own story and their experience. They share why they have discovered that their marriage is an important reflection of the gospel, what God is doing through Jesus Christ in this world. Whether you are a lay leader, a pastor, or a parent, this is a great episode to hear the story of people who are exhibiting faithful Christian living in the midst of a difficult marriage, in the midst of a difficult world, but with grace and hope, faith and love. Thanks so much for tuning in. Enjoy the episode.
We are Wesley, and you belong here.
My name is Victoria Borum, and I am Wesley.
I'm Lenny Lucchetti, and I am Wesley.
My name is Chris, and guess what? I am Wesley.
Hi, I'm Tina Shappett, and I am Wesley.
We recognize this beautiful diversity that the Lord has called together that is Wesley.
My name is Corey Merritt, and I am Wesley.
I am Wayne Brown, and I am Wesley.
I am Colleen Durr, and I belong here. You belong here too, because we are Wesley.
Welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast, Lori. Welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast, Matt. We're glad that you've joined us.
So glad to be here.
Yeah.
Let me start with Lori, and Matt, I'd love your take on this question as well. So you've penned this book together, An Impossible Marriage. Let me start just by asking you, Lori, what is a mixed orientation marriage mean?
Yeah, a mixed orientation marriage is where the default sexual attraction or just general attraction is not toward the gender of your spouse. So put another way is when I struggle with lust, it's not toward men. But yet I am in this heterosexual marriage, or as I believe biblically, it's just marriage.
How about for you, Matt? Would there be anything that you would add to that description?
Yeah, no, that is just the accurate description of a mixed orientation marriage. It could be one or both spouses. So it can be different nuances.
One of the points that you bring out in your book that might strike some readers or listeners as interesting is that you say mixed orientation marriage isn't so different from heterosexual marriage. I'd love for, let's start with you, Matt. Why do you say that a mixed orientation marriage isn't so different from a heterosexual marriage?
Well, a lot of times when people think, or if people are hearing the term mixed orientation marriage for the first time, there's this almost like glazed over look of like, wow, I have no realm of comprehension for why or how this would work. Yet, as I am a licensed counselor in the state of Michigan, and I work a lot with heterosexual marriages, with mixed orientation marriages as well, the issues that tend to come up are remarkably similar. In just how sexuality plays a key into the marriage, how communication and different desires are going to be incorporated and handled in the marriage relationship. And so when it comes down to the boots on the ground, day-to-day life in, I was about to say life in, life out, but day in, day out living of the marriage, it is remarkably similar. There are some nuances, but it's just, it's two people in relationship just like any other marriage would be.
To you, Lori. I like one of the things that you write in the book is that you all write that we all have an orientation toward the self. And so that orientation toward the self is something that everybody is bringing into their marriage, if they're married, or just into their life, if they're not married. Talk to us about why do you say that a mixed orientation marriage isn't so different from a heterosexual marriage?
I think I woke up to this hugely in living the book pages out. But I was wrestling with, after recommitting to stay in our marriage, so spoiler alert, but that's chapter one. I started digging into my friends' relationships, and they're all straight as the day is long. And I, not every friend, but many of them in these heterosexual marriages. And I was finding they'd say the same sentences I did. Like, the heart can lead to the physical connection, or I never want to have sex with my husband, or oh my goodness, she's so blah, or he's so blah. And I was like, what the heck is no one happy? Is marriage, especially opposite sex marriage, which I believe is God's only definition of marriage, like, is this a joke? Like, why does everybody seem to hate each other? This isn't just Matt and I wrestling through this garbage. Like, y'all seem to like barely tolerate each other. So I was very confused. And what helped me after like grilling my friends as to, okay, is your marriage even good at all? And let's talk about sex in marriage, and maybe it's good for him and terrible for her, or good for her and bad for him. What helped me was theology and understanding Ephesians 5, 31 and 32, which we've all probably read 1,000 times if we've been in the church for any length of years. She says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, and the two shall be united into one. This is a great mystery. This is a profound mystery. Yet I'm talking about Christ in the church. And I've read that a lot of times. And I've even heard something like, yes, men and women, blah, blah, Christ in the church. And I'd be like, I don't even know what you're saying. But when I was at the end of our marriage, essentially, is when I found the beginning. And this was the starting place for me, that men and women, yeah, are so different. Hence all the jokes, right? But is it really a cosmic joke or cosmic punishment? Or is in and through our differences, do we get the privilege, if God has called us to marriage, do we get the privilege of showing the world how much God loves us and how he will marry us? So when we die to our natural self, you just said it, defaults, whatever they may be, Matt's default isn't always me. I am not that cute. Like, when he dies to himself to be one with me, and I die to myself to be one with Matt, we show the world a picture of the gospel, how Jesus died to be one with us and how we're to die daily to experience increasing oneness with him. So that ain't so different. And it really makes me appreciate sex difference even more, maybe more than all the straight people, not really, but because I see, oh, Matt's so different from me, but how different is God from humanity? That's amazing that we get to live out the gospel 24/7. Also, it's impossible, no matter how straight you are.
So you've both come through different experiences in your sexuality. You've detailed them in your book, An Impossible Marriage, What Our Mixed Orientation Marriage Has Taught Us About Love and the Gospel. You talk about same-sex attraction, and you talk about sexual addiction, and how both of these were experiences and aspects of your lives that you needed to work through, and that God, in many ways, brought you together to help one another through these different ways in order to have a faithful marriage. Now, Laura, you've already spoiled a bit of the ending of the book, that you are married and you're both committed to this marriage. As you say, this is the definition of marriage that you have discerned biblically. And yet the book has lots of vulnerability to it, right? Lots of letting the reader in on who you are and where you've been and what you've done. Matt, let's start with you, and then I'll go to Lori with the question. How did you come to a place of vulnerability to write a book like this?
I think for me, it's weird to say, but it's not entirely vulnerable. In the sense that a lot of it, like when I'm talking with Lori, in the kitchen, and that's where a lot of this book was born out of, these kitchen conversations for us. I can talk about all this stuff and it's not making me uncertain in our relationship. And even though that it's now written out there, and I think I'm still kind of coming to grips with the fact that, wow, yeah, there is this book out there that has a lot of information about my struggles and Lori's struggles and our marriage together. It's different. It doesn't feel as vulnerable when it's not someone that you desperately care about and you're on this uncertain footing. Mm. And so I will say that for me, and I'll be honest, I come out looking a lot better in the book than I feel like I really was in real life.
That's not true.
Because there is a lot of pain. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of sorrow. There was a lot of just stuff going on in the period of time that the book is being written about. But it was all written about after the fact. It wasn't written when in the midst of all of this pain. And so, yes, it's vulnerable and people reading it might be like, wow, this is really open. This is really authentic. This is really messy. But the fact is, the only reason we could write it is because God called us to. Hmm. And the only reason that we could have been faithful to it, I think, is because we had already done a lot of the work in the midst of our own kind of private conversations and in our small group that was just a vital part of our journey in this time. So by the time we got to the point where God's like, and I want you to write a book about this, it wasn't all of the stuff that was currently present tense in kind of turmoil. It had saw it kind of hit a resolution point. We're still working on our metaphor though, we're not complete, but we've come past some of the stuff that we're already writing about. But I'll let Lori jump in here too.
Well, if I might just ask Lori to hold off for a second, because one of the things I hear is it's like there's been a practice of vulnerability both with each other, and you discuss some of the vulnerability you have with each other. You've just mentioned being in a small group. I know that in the book you both talk about seeing different professionals and being with on a marriage retreat where you have a professional working, helping you be vulnerable with each other, but you're also vulnerable with that person. The question's coming to mind just before we get to your take on that, Lori, for you, Matt, is would you say that vulnerability was something that you practiced leading up to this, or it just became part of the rhythm of your life so that you're able to write a book that I would say has a measure of vulnerability and authenticity to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we are very vulnerable in our marriage, and I feel like we've always had the ability to talk. That was one of the things that really brought us together, even in our dating stage, that we would talk about things deeply. And honestly, I feel like it's one of the strengths that God has given us, like in this place of marriage where everyone looks and sees the mixed orientation piece and is like, well, the physical aspect must be really hard, and therefore, how does this work? Our communication, our ability to be open and honest and share kind of at least intellectually deeply. I'm working on the emotional deeply in many ways. But in order for us to be able to share, we've had to talk about things and get used to talking about things that most couples do not talk about. I can't tell you how many times I have had either friends or small group members or clients in my office that if I'm sharing like conversational things that me and Lori talk about, they're like, I don't understand how you can talk about this sort of thing with your wife, whether it's like my porn addiction that I had, gone through in the first 6 years of our marriage that I had come clean through at year six, and talking about that openly, honestly, and being able to share like the reality of what we're going through. And so, yeah, there was a whole lot of practice of being vulnerable. And it's something that we continue to really try and cultivate, because if we are not vulnerable with one another, if we're just keeping things kind of silently swirling inside, that's honestly where our struggles deepen most often, is in that silence, in that darkness, that if we're not sharing it with one another, if we're not able to pray with one another, and not just one another, but also with that small group that I had mentioned, that we're not supposed to do this journey of a Christian life in isolation. And so we have to be vulnerable.
Lori, let me put the same question to you. How did you come to a place of being willing to write this book with such vulnerability?
So we were approached by university to write a book on marriage, on mixed orientation marriage. And I was like, oh, heck no. like a controversial conversation in the middle of a controversial conversation. Like, nobody wants to touch mixed orientation marriage. There is not another book like this out there. That's not because nobody thought about it, I don't think. It's because it's scary to write about this. Yeah. And the only thing I could say is I felt such pressure from the Holy Spirit, you know, when you're like, I got to do this, that sense to write this. And so we threw the proposal on the table after they asked us, and everything was greenlit so fast. And as we prayed about it, you know, there were different approaches we were going to take. Like, do we take this way? Do we interview a bunch of different mixed orientation marriages? Do we do this, do that? As we prayed about it, I felt like the only way to go about such a tender conversation was with vulnerability. Yeah. So in writing it, to take that humble, vulnerable approach, I just outlined the whole thing, and Matt and I discussed along the way, and we just prayed over each chapter as it came. And you know, I think because of the level of vulnerability, it's not graphic, but it is vulnerable. You know, people, I think, wonder, like, did you mean to write this? Like, did you turn your brain off and just start writing? And we prayed over every word. We prayed over every chapter. I kept checking in with myself. Do you want to share this level? Do you want to share this level? But I've been so shocked at not just the marriages, and I'm not just talking mixed orientation marriages. I'm talking just all the marriages. And single people who have been so deeply grateful for aspects, layers of the mysterious marriage that like are so talked about in these theoretical and theological lofty ways or with cliches, like to just talk about the grit of it in real life. Like this year, this life is in real life hard. And so for us to say, can we just cut the crap for a hot second? I'm not saying that theology is unnecessary. I'm not saying talking about it in these big picture ways and with at some points like truth, cliches that are actually true. I'm not saying that's unimportant, but we also need the grit because it's so stinking hard and yet so stinking beautiful. So I've been shocked at the prayerful writing process. And we try to be as spirit-driven as possible, but then too, like the response is wow and thank you for the most part.
One of the things I appreciate in the book is that you've taken a posture that is trusting of the reader, right? You're entrusting something to them, but you've established right at the start, and it's in the flavor of the book the whole way through, is a posture that's also willing to listen, right? Mm-hmm. So you've shown how even when it was very hard and it took work for you to get to a position of being willing to listen to the other and able to listen to the other and hear through the different levels, that you had a posture that was open to other people, so that it was like if they were going to read what you had to write, they had to know that you were willing to listen to them, even though since you're writing, you can't listen to them from the book. One of the things you say at the start is whenever you're talking to people who are reading this who might be same-sex attracted, is that you say, you know, we see you, we acknowledge you, we know that your experience might have similarities and dissimilarities to mine, Lori. I would love for you to talk to us a little bit about that attitude and posture. Let's start with you, Lori. How did you come to have that attitude or posture? And you said you define marriage or see the Bible defining marriage as between a man and a woman. How did you have that posture towards people who might say that's not the proper definition of marriage, or that's such an exclusive or exclusionary definition of marriage? How did you have that posture of openness and yet security towards other people?
Because that could be me in like a, it could have been me in like a heartbeat, you know? Like I think sometimes when we recognize our own level of sinfulness, we can either like batten down the hatches and grab all the stones around us and get ready to chuck them. But like Jesus did with the woman caught in adultery, we don't know what he wrote, but he can convict us quick and say, that's you. Like you want to throw stones at her. Let's look at your heart. And so if I look across the line at, let's say, affirming LGBT people who, some of them, sure, probably, like, legit hate me. I've been called some pretty horrific things, and not just on the internet. Like, there's been some tough stuff. When I see that, even though they're screaming for inclusion, yes, but they're screaming for Jesus. And I know they're believers, but they're saying they're diagnosing how they need Jesus in a deeper level in the very ways they scream at me. They're saying, you don't include me, you don't love me, you don't see me. And I hear in that, I hear, you need deeper knowing of Jesus' love and inclusion for you and belonging with you. And so I think I have just learned how to translate people's hateful words into self-diagnosis of where they need Jesus. And I can do the same thing too. Like, if only they didn't hate me, if only they blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Jesus loves you. That's enough.
Matt, I want to bring the question to you, and you can feel free to answer about having that posture of openness and seeing, acknowledging another person. But I want to read off the list of things that you all said were needs. And this comes in a section that you had written, Matt. So this is the list that you all developed for needs that we have, every person has, to be affirmed, desired, included, loved, nurtured, purposed, rested, delighted in, and protected. Maybe that sparks some of the reflections. I wanted to put that list out there because it might be ones that people could start to key in on, or start to be hooks that people could attach things like maybe whenever they come against an attitude that is so difficult or even hateful, as Lori has mentioned, that there might be a lack, that somebody just is operating out of a lack of one of these things. So to you, Matt, talk to us a little bit about this posture of openness and acknowledgement that you all describe near the start of the book.
Yeah. So when it comes to just calling out that, hey, we see you. I mean, that is something we have a ton of single friends, some of them LGBT, some of them not. But one of the rhetorics, one of the kind of not as well confronted maybe aspects of growing up in the church has been this concept of, well, you grow up and then you get married. And it's that assumption is that if you're a woman marrying a guy marrying a woman. And that is not going to be everyone's story. And that is not a lot of people's story. And that's not the only way to have a thriving life in Jesus. And so I think part of that process of saying, hey, we see you, wasn't just to necessarily LGBT people or same-sex attracted people, because there has been in the past kind of this concept of, hey, get married to, you know, someone of the opposite sex and it's going to quote unquote fix you. And that's not true. That's not reality. That is something that's been very harmful for many people. And to acknowledge, like, hey, this story is mine and Lori's story. We were called to this marriage that we have. It is not prescriptive to everyone who is maybe even wrestling with some similar things. And to kind of shift it, I would have to say, okay, because one of the things that I struggle with and that really came out in our marriage was the pornography addiction that I had. And while I would love to say to every person that walks into my room, I want your accountability partner to be your spouse. I want your spouse to be the first person you go to when you're struggling. I want that. That is not reality for many people, whether it's the husband, whether it's the wife, that they don't have the same. I got lucky with Lori. I got providentially blessed with Lori, and that she is able to hear about my sexual temptations and not just be disgusted and like, you know, kick me out of the house or whatever. Like, she's able to look at me and kind of look at her own story and say, like, okay, there's a lot of grace that I can extend here. Not everyone has that. And so while I would love to say, hey, go and talk to your spouse about all of your struggles, it takes time to develop this foundation of trust, this foundation of being safe in the midst of that conversation. But because just a heterosexual marriage in the church has been kind of the end game in many ways. I think it was just, it was really important for us to say, like, this is not necessarily something that you are going to have. And it's not a marker of success or failure if your story doesn't look like ours.
And to like have compassion on affirming LGBT people, there's like a posture of repentance we need to have, I think is what I'm hearing what you're saying, Matt, is like, we've kind of failed at the whole marriage thing, period, like in funneling everyone there. And so I think even in this compassionate, even if they're screaming at us approach, it's yes, there's some needs in there. And then two, there's just a repentant heart on behalf of the church that like, we've failed talking about, yeah, homosexuality in general. We have failed because we've been worshiping at the altar of marriage and sex and marriage for like ever.
I want to steer things towards maybe a bit of a pragmatic conclusion. Now, we have a variety of people who are listening in. We'll have pastors who are listening in, lay leaders who are listening in, people who have just come across this episode because they know you, Lori, they know you, Matt, and they want to hear your story, or maybe somebody has told you about them. So I want to give you a few different people, and I'd like you to pick one of the people, and if you could say something to them from the bottom of their heart that you would say, this is what I want you to leave with. This is, you can speak to them. So maybe there's the pastor, maybe there's a person who is heterosexual, but they are now finding themselves in a mixed orientation marriage, or maybe they're a person who's same-sex attracted and they are coming to grips that they are in a mixed orientation marriage, or maybe they are a parent and they have a child that they're trying to teach truth about what is marriage between a man and a woman, and yet their child does not fit, their default sexual attraction doesn't fit heterosexual marriage. So there's a number of different people there. Maybe if one of these situations perks in your mind, what would you have to say to this person?
I'll jump in, Matt. I'll take the pastor, because I'm guessing seminary, there's quite a few people training to be pastors. But really, okay, here's my goal for the church, is that exactly how you just restated it back to me, is that this conversation would be boring someday. And not because we're like, oh yes, of course, love is love, of course, same-sex marriage, but because we see it as, this is my version of sexual brokenness, this is Lori's version of sexual brokenness, this is my kids, so that when our kid comes forward, so maybe I'm talking to parents too, or the parent comes forward to you, pastor, saying, my kid just came out, my hair's on fire, I'm dying, it's just, oh, that's his version of sexual brokenness. I think because we've worshiped at the idol of marriage is the goal and sex in marriage is also the fixer of all your sexual brokenness, instead of what's the purpose of your life, oneness with God, oneness with the church, and invite others into this oneness, it's instead become a timeline as opposed to this romance with God. Then we got to ask, okay, what's the mode God's called you to do the mission to make disciples? Is it married or single? These are equally valuable. So when little Johnny comes out to you, parent, and parent comes to you, pastor, it's not the end of the world. It's, oh, well, okay, that's his version of sexual brokenness. Maybe God's calling him to a mixed orientation marriage. Maybe God's calling him to singleness. Either way, God is on the throne. He's going to use this for his glory. Can't wait till this is boring. So I just want to put that little hope in your heart.
My only comment with that, and maybe this is a follow-up question, because there might be some people are saying, because they haven't read the book, they haven't got a sense of you sharing your story, is like, Lord, that sounds so flippant, right? They're saying like, how could like, my heart is breaking open. Yes, sexual brokenness. Yes, I get that. Yes, mine is addiction, or mine is lust, or maybe mine is just frigidity, right? Like I hardly want to be touched by somebody else. You know, that's the sexual brokenness they have. What would you say that somebody's like, Lori, that just sounds so flippant to me? What might you say to the person that is thinking that right now?
I hear that. I really do. And I probably would have said that sentence a few years ago. And so that's the hard part about being on a journey, is like, I couldn't hear jack about sex and the beauty of it at certain levels in my story. Like, I would have just thrown your book across the room or turned that podcast right off. So I hear that and see that. And I, like we've been talking about, I hear you. And that's why I said that's the goal. But the process in, and I, maybe it's never, it's probably never in like pre-new heavens and new earth. But if that can be like, okay, how can we get there? Man, my issue is frigidity. That's a huge piece of mine, of locking up. Okay, why is that? Start asking these questions. Okay, if it's addiction, can we stop rolling our eyes and mouths? Every man's battle, it's every woman's battle. Can, which those can be helpful things, but can we instead say, let's understand why? Let's get to the heart of it. Let's talk about core needs. And so I think the journey is very serious, but if we don't see the end goal as something attainable and like joyful and less shamey and hidey, I don't know if we're going to want to go toward there. We're going to just keep staying in our little silos of terror and hidden in addiction. So I respect the journey. Our journey, the book was over a series of years. Like, so I hear that. And I receive that need to take it seriously. We just need to have a goal so we can remove some of the shame and hiding.
Well, and that is one of the things that shines through, especially as your theology, Matt and Lori, comes through that marriage is about God. And that's why you are humble to receive, what does God say marriage is? What does God say marriage is for? What are the gifts that are part of marriage? And you explore all these things through the text. So it's clear that the goal that you have in mind in writing this is not simply to be known and heard, but is how do we point people wherever they are coming from towards God in Christ in their marriage or in their singleness, right? Whichever their calling is, this is what you've written about. This is what you've wanted to do. And you've done that by sharing your story. Matt, to you, the person that comes to mind for you and maybe the final word you would have to them.
Yeah. So to anyone who would maybe find themselves in a mixed orientation marriage, or maybe considering a mixed orientation marriage, if they're in a dating relationship, whether you are the heterosexual partner, whether you are the non-heterosexual partner, don't know how you would identify, marriage does not have to look like whatever the cultural stereotype is. And sex within marriage doesn't have to look like whatever the cultural stereotype is. And so one of the most important things I would say to you is start to understand the sexual framework that you are approaching this marriage with. For myself, I approached it very idolatrously. I thought sex would complete me. I thought it would fulfill me. Lori approached it from the other extreme, where it was kind of this thing that she didn't think about, never really wanted to engage in, thought it was going to be like, oh, well, we'll have a kid or two and then it'll be done and we'll never have to deal with it again. We approached it from very different mental frameworks. And the fact is, if you don't understand the framework you are bringing into the marriage, you don't know kind of how to correct. Now we can say, and we will say, you will never be completed by your spouse. They are not made to complete you. You are not made to complete them. You have to look almost through your spouse to God as the need meter, as the origination of, well, the only one who will complete you. And if you stop looking at God and you start looking at your spouse, it's going to go one of two ways. Either you're going to be really disappointed by the fact that they don't meet all of your needs, or you're going to be really disappointed by the fact that it's just not as purposeful and enjoyable as you thought it would be. But marriage is not about our own personal kind of just happiness. Yes, you can have a very happy marriage, but you have to look at your spouse and even as you're at yourself as a conduit to bring God closer to those around you, both your spouse and, you know, kids if they're involved, and just your community. And so if you stop looking at God in this marriage, it will fail at some level. It might not crash and burn. It might look successful on the outside, but it's not actually fulfilling the purpose of metaphoring Christ's love for the church if you are not looking at God in the process.
Lori, Matt, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today on the Wesley Seminary podcast.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having us.
Joining us today has been have been Lori and Matt Krieg. They are authors of An Impossible Marriage, What Our Mixed Orientation Marriage Has Taught Us About Love and the Gospel. Listeners, thanks for tuning in, making this conversation possible. Cam, thank you for your editing and production work. If this episode has been helpful to you, ask that you would like and subscribe. Share this episode around on your platforms on which you're listening. The Wesley Seminary podcast exists to introduce topics and resources for fruitful ministry, and I pray that that will be the case with today's conversation, Lori. Thanks so much, Lori and Matt. Appreciate you taking the time, and trust that you have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.